Okay. Great talk, Sean. We thank you. And thank you, Dr. Parizzi and Robin, for the very generous invitation to me to participate. I'm really delighted to do that for a number of reasons. Montreal is my hometown. It's great to be back in Montreal. I was born at the Royal Vic, which I was sad to see closed down just a few days ago, but there's now a bright, shiny new home, apparently. And I am an alumnus of this department and spent a fantastic year in Purvis Hall. Spent a lot of time in the grad club, too, which was also equally good, just a little ways up the street, if I remember correctly. And I see a lot of the folks who taught me at that time, including Robin. So it's really a lot of fun to be back, and I appreciate the invitation. I'm now at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences. We say that a lot as opposed to saying ISIS, which is our acronym. So we usually say I'm from the good ISIS. And every time I open the newspaper, I convince myself that any publicity is good publicity. Robin asked me to talk a little bit about the future of big data. I don't consider myself to be an expert in this domain by any means, but I'll give you some thoughts that I have and that our institution is working on, which I think are relevant. But I thought I'd start by telling a little bit about where we are now, the current state of ISIS. So ISIS, as some of you will know, is a health services research institute in Ontario. We're a freestanding research institute, and we are like many places that house administrative health data. We have a large data repository that I'll describe in a moment. I think what's a little bit different, perhaps, is that we also bring to that data a large critical mass of expertise in leveraging that data and exploiting that data, using it for understanding the health system better, understanding how policies influence health outcomes and costs and so on, and for fundamental discovery that I think is really critical in health services research. So it's that combination of a rich data store combined with that expertise that I think has given ISIS its impact over the years. Our data is big. Is it so-called big data? I guess it depends who you ask, but it's pretty big. It's individual level data. We have data that covers really all of the publicly funded healthcare services in Ontario for the entire population. And that's about 13 million people. And it goes back as far as 1991 for some of our databases. And those databases are being expanded all the time, and I'll talk a little bit about that. The data that we receive, the data identified, but we then de-identify it, and we apply a unique identifier that allows us to link across data sets to allow us to follow individuals over time and across the healthcare system as they transition. But this is an interesting point that I think is lost often on some of the folks that I interact with who are more traditional kind of big data people, geneticists, genomics, or proteomics, or even clinical researchers. And that's the notion that we don't have consent to collect or use our data. Our data is collected by the state through the usual interactions that individuals that are insured have with the healthcare system, and we receive that data and are able to use it for health system improvement, evaluation, and research purposes. But we don't have the consent of those individuals to use it for that purpose. So our ability to receive and use and disclose or share that data rests on three pillars. The first is legislation, and I'll tell you that one of the reasons why ISIS has been successful and I think is a key point for other places that might like to do something like ISIS is that our institute was actually written right into the privacy legislation in Ontario when that legislation was passed in 2003, giving us a particular status called a prescribed entity, which allows us to receive data and use it for health system improvement and research purposes. And that has been enormously helpful to us over the years as the various winds have shifted with respect to privacy and security. The second pillar are very strong data sharing agreements with all of our partners, including the Ministry of Health. So anyone that shares data with us, we have a very strict data sharing agreement that lays out exactly how we will use that data. And in some cases, we need permission every time we use it, depending on who the provider of that data is. Others are more permissive. But nonetheless, there is a very strict framework under which we can access each of those data sets. And the third are trusted policies and procedures that have developed over the last 23 years that enable us to ensure we're working with the data in a way that is consistent with legislation, with regulations, with policy, and hopefully with public opinion. So at the end of the day, you get this sort of thing, which is, I won't go through this figure in any detail, but just gives you a sense of a multitude of data sets that are clinical, some are more administrative, some are actually obtained primarily by researchers with grants who go out and bring data in that is then linked to our data sets. And ultimately, you create linked data sets for de-identified linked data sets for analytic purposes. So I was asked to talk about the future, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But I'm reminded of the quote of William Gibson, who said, "The future is already here, it's just not evenly distributed." And I say that to remind myself and you that some things I'm going to describe as being in the future are already happening in lots of places in the world. And so some of this is about catching up. Some of the things we're already doing at ISIS, and some of the things we hope to be doing or will be doing. But clearly, this is happening in different pockets, and I think really it's about grasping opportunities that are in front of us. So I think one of the first and key directions that we're moving in, and I think we need to be moving in as we talk about the availability of data and the platforms that Robin mentioned that are being established across the country, is to enable better access to data. There's no question that at a place like ISIS, we've been criticized in the past for not allowing easy access to data. If you were an ISIS scientist and you were sort of inside the walls, you had great access to data. But if you weren't, well, you know, we'll help you if we can. We'll get around to it when we have some time. It really wasn't core business. And that, I think, is not an approach that's going to be celebrated going forward. I think what we need to achieve is much better and much broader access. And we've been lucky with the funding that we received under the CIHR SPOR initiative to create what we call the Data and Analytics Services Platform. And this is just a screenshot from our website. As of a couple of months ago, any researcher in Canada can have access to linked, de-identified, research-ready data sets that ISIS houses. And the data sets that are available currently under that service are listed here. They are the many of the core data sets of ISIS. It's not all the data yet, and that's partly a reflection of our data sharing agreements with the data partners, but we are continually adding to the data that's available. And we believe very strongly that this is something that is a key, not only enabler of research and evaluation of Ontario's health system, but is going to enable research across the country and hopefully ultimately will lead to really good collaborative cross-jurisdictions, jurisdictional studies as well. The second thing is to expand linkage beyond the traditional health data sets. We need to start looking at other things outside of the healthcare system as important determinants of health. I'm just giving you one example here. This is a data set that we brought in from the Ministry of Community and Social Services. This is a relationship that we built up over a couple of years where we were able to identify all of the individuals in Ontario who are on disability support programs. We were to link that with health data and then look at, in this particular instance, was there screening for colorectal cancer similar, better, worse than for the general population? And not a big surprise, their screening rates were substantially worse than those of the general population. Again, giving a very quick snapshot on an idea of the importance of being able to look more than just at health data sets if you really want to understand health. But that's not where this needs to stop. And so where we're working very closely with the Ontario government now is to bring multiple data from multiple silos or ministries together, linked across those data sets to give a much more holistic and broad understanding of the determinants of health. So things like education data, social service data, as I mentioned, housing data, youth justice data, economic data, et cetera, trying to convince the government, in fact, the government is convinced, they're now trying to figure out how they will do this, how to bring this data together in order that we can study it not just for health outcomes, but also for outcomes of other services that are being provided. How does health influence education outcomes? How does education influence health outcomes? And so on. There's tremendous interest in doing this. There's a lot of concern. So the fact that we've had this particular status under health legislation is great, but there isn't a similar legislation for education data and social service data and so on. So there are all sorts of hoops to jump through and all sorts of conversations to be had, and many, many lawyers are being kept very, very busy as these discussions ensue. But I think this really is a key future state that we need to achieve, and we know this has been achieved elsewhere. The UK has some great examples of bringing data from multiple ministries together, which we need to move on as well. We've established strong relationships with First Nations and Métis partners in Ontario. I think anyone who knows Canada knows there are huge challenges in the health of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities in this country. And we have been very fortunate to establish partnerships that allow us to obtain identifiers for Aboriginal populations in Ontario and therefore study their health. I think this is a key area that we're going to continue to work in and work very heavily in the years going forward. Evolving big data linkages, well, EMRs, these were mentioned already. So we now have brought in about 500,000 electronic medical records, primary care records, which we've linked to our data, and it's been a fascinating experiment. Most of these are actually full text EMRs, so we have all of the information in the EMR. Some are extracts. But we see the need to expand this to a population level store of EMR data, and it being absolutely key to understanding the healthcare system going forward. We're working also with the Ontario Brain Institute bring data together around specific patient cohorts, neuroimaging data, genomics data, proteomics, metabolomics, et cetera. Again, trying to bridge two very different worlds, the worlds of health services research and the worlds of genomics or metabolomics, to bring a more nuanced understanding around health. And I think this is going to be another interesting area as we evolve. I'm being given the time signal, so I'm actually just going to skip a couple of slides here and talk about some obstacles as I close. So the future is bright. I mean, we've heard that already this morning in the panel, and we've heard about some major investments that are happening. But I do think there are some obstacles, and I thought it would be important to talk about them. When we talk about bringing different worlds together, even if it is different data worlds, at the end of the day, we come from different cultures. The scientists who do health services research are very different from the ones who do genomics. And bringing them together means bridging cultures. And that's not an easy thing. It takes conversations, it takes time, it takes trust. And those are things that we need to work on. And I think it's too simplistic to think you just bring the data together and the magic happens. It doesn't happen that way. And so I think we need to work very heavily on building an understanding of each other's worlds. Data governance and privacy. We don't have consent to use the data that we have. Most of the folks we're talking about, if you're talking about genomics and so on, they have consent with their data. And they don't really understand the notion that you can't put it all up in a cloud and share it across the world for wonderful discoveries. And I get that. But they need to understand the constraints that we're under. We need to try to understand where they're coming from. These are serious issues. They can't be ignored, but they can be solved. What's the question? I think there's a sense that if we just bring all the data together, we'll figure out some really cool questions and we'll answer them. I'm not so sure that's always the right way to do it. I think we need to figure out some key questions that we want to ask and then identify which data needs to be brought together to answer them. And finally, public acceptance, I would argue, is uncertain and fragile around this work. I think you all know who this guy is, Edward Snowden, and the impact that his revelations had on public trust around data. You've probably have heard, or you may have heard about care.data, the NHS debacle around providing more open access to health system data and how that had to be shut down. You may not know about this woman. Her name is Lois Kamenetz. This is a woman who about 2 years ago was flying out of Pearson Airport in Toronto down to Miami to go on a cruise. And as she got to the U.S. Customs agent and had her passport scanned, the agent up on the screen, the agent saw that she'd had a mental health admission to hospital a few years back and declared her a risk to the U.S. and refused her entry, and so she missed her cruise. And the next day, this was on the front page of the Toronto Star. And I can tell you, when I saw that headline, I actually got a bit of a chill down my spine, thinking maybe the NSA had cracked our data. But what had actually happened was that 2 years before, this woman had been depressed, had been suicidal, and her husband had made a 911 call. And the police had come and taken her to hospital. She'd been treated and got better, and now she was doing fine. But the record of that 911 call is in a security database in Canada, which is shared with the U.S. through cross-border security arrangements. And suddenly that is now appearing on border guards' screens and allowing you to be barred from entry. Now, my point here is not about 911 calls, but rather about public views of how data is used. And I think, again, this goes back to this issue of consent and our need to explain to the public what we're doing with all this data, and explain to the public the benefits of this data. And I don't think we're doing a good job. I'm talking about ISIS in general. I don't think we're doing a good job of explaining to the public about the importance of this data, the value of this data, and the opportunities to do good and to improve health and the health system. And finally, are we bringing the policymakers and the decision makers along for the ride with all of this work? Are we sure that they're there to listen to the wonderful insights that we're going to be providing, or we think we're going to be providing? Are we sure we're asking the right questions? Are they helping us to determine what the questions are? Or are we going to have sort of radio silence when we're trying to transmit our wonderful insights out and find that no one's listening? So I'll stop there, and I think we'll have time for questions as part of the panel.